Hey, it's Peter here with MyFSHD. You know, I've always told you we are a global organization, truly a global organization, helping people with FSHD all around the world, wherever we're needed. And so far, we're finding we're needed everywhere. You know, we just heard from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. So we're sending the kit out there. That brings us now to 71 countries that we've been working in. But also, you know, actually, you know, you could make a case 72, because, you know, I just took a trip. I told you, you know, a little while ago, a little teaser, that we had a top secret project going. And, well, so, you know, you wonder why I've been away, why I've been quiet. Well, I took a little trip.
Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip that started from this tropic port aboard this tiny ship. Was a mighty sailing man, the skipper brave and sure. 5 passengers set sail that day for a 3-hour tour. A 3-hour tour.
Well, it wasn't quite on a boat. Took a plane, a couple of planes, and I went to China. Okay, I was invited to go to China to discuss, well, primarily about FSHD therapeutic development. The FSHD community is actually large, very large in China, as you might expect. And the research community has been quite isolated, as happens, not just for COVID, but also for, political reasons. They're quite isolated. And, you know, they just wanted to get caught up on things. I don't know. It's kind of interesting. I caught a lot of grief for agreeing to go. But, you know, the reason I decided to go was because, you know, I think of myself here in the U.S. and say, do I want to be held accountable in my life for the actions of the Biden crime family? And the answer is no. Okay. You know, I understand that's our government. That's who's in there. You know, regardless of what you think of them, it's, but I would hope people would say, well, we're not going to help you because, you know, your president's an idiot and corrupt. Now, for those of you, you know, maybe think back, those of you who have different opinions, you might say the same thing under Trump. Would you want that to be the reflection on you? Yeah, some people yes, some people no. But, you know, not to get too political, you know, it's at some point, you know, we are united by being part of the worldwide FSHD community. And not the way other people say it. Other people will say the worldwide FSHD community is a shakedown, right? It's just talk, right? And it's a way to try to, you know, they want to align everybody to do what they're told, and it's a funding and control thing. We actually genuinely help people. In fact, a number of other countries and foundations have told us that despite all this talk about these great global alliances in the FSHD community, the only people who actually help them have been us. You know, nobody gives them money. Nobody gives them help. You know, whether this is Brazil or South Africa or Australia or just, you know, people in Poland. I could list off 70 countries, you know, where they are. You know, we go where the people are. We are united by a common cause, which is fighting FSHD, trying to cure FSHD, and trying to diagnose or identify people with FSHD. And so, yeah, I mean, I gotta tell you, you know, but something, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. You know, there's the one person who totally supported me, my mom. I was actually terrified to tell my mom, hey, mom, I'm going to go to China and I'm going to talk with the FSHD community. I'm going to meet with the patient organization, talk with the researchers, meet with some companies that are over there in the space. And I thought mom was going to say, I thought she was going to play her mom card and forbid me from going. And instead, she almost teared up. And she's like, I'm so proud of you. Really caught me off guard. She's like, you know, helping these people because, you know, they really need help, right? They're in a bad situation, tough situation, I guess we'll say. And it was kind of, I just got back. I was gone for 10 days and they, you know, it was interesting. I wasn't really able to communicate with my mom and, you know, we'll get into some of the issues, but I was really pleased that mom actually, she sees the benefit. You know, you help people because it's the right thing to do. And yeah, and I think people did actually kind of come around to it. I think the initial thing, you know, they were raising a bail fund for me here. They said, you know, because I speak my mind, as I've said, which is not always a good thing. The determination here was that I was bound to say something so incredibly stupid and offensive, though true, that I'd end up in a Chinese prison. But then it turns out, you know, nothing even close. When it came to science, we had free, open conversation. When tech came to meeting with the patient communities, we said, what can we do to help? And they were like, how can we help you? And when it came to therapeutics, you know, their concern is they want to make sure that as the world is getting FSHD therapeutics, that China is not left out. And how can we make that happen? And you know what? I'm going to do everything I can to help them out, as I would for any of you. All right. Honestly, that's the truth. And so, you know, I do understand the, you know, we're not making any money over there. We're not like, you know, the NBA going making billions of dollars off of slave labor, or anything like that. And I did come back with all my kidneys. That was a question. First question Andrea asked me, do you have both kidneys? I don't have any big scars, any bigger than the ones I've already had from other things I'm missing. You know, it's, yeah, you know, all joking aside, it's, you know, I found the people that I interacted with, the professors and the researchers, just really to be, they wanted to be, they're like sponges for knowledge, you know, and not like IP theft, but like real knowledge, you know, what's going on in the world, you know, that we should know about that can help us with neuromuscular disease. I went and spoke at Fudan University and Hanshuang Hospital. Then I went to Guangzhou, and that's in Shanghai. Then I went to Guangzhou, and which is north of Hong Kong, flew down there and spoke at Sun Yat-sen University. So these two of the top universities in the country. And I met with a number of neurologists and physicians. I met Bai Shengming, who is the head of FSHD China. Got to meet him in person, and we talked a bit about what we can do. Met his father, who's, you know, doing his best. And what can we do to help yet another FSHD community? And because, you know, we are all in this together. And you know what? I think there could be benefits. You know, I got to see, now granted, they're going to show me, you know, they're polishing everything up and putting on their best show, but that's what everybody does. You know, it's easy to be kind of a tourist in any country. You don't really, you know, so I'm not gonna make any judgments on life in China or Chinese politics, but I can say that my trip was wonderful, actually. And the people I met, there's some really brilliant scientists there, some medical doctors, and really desperate patients. And we're gonna do what we can, and it's gonna turn out to benefit everyone else, because we are bringing our diagnostic protocol, our putative diagnostic, as we have to call it here, our research test, to China, so that they can diagnose where they're going to be allowed, so they can certify it and properly diagnose the patient population in China. So one of the things I did leading up to the trip is I had to run all the numbers on our diagnostic. We're going to publish this soon, but let me tell you, we're north of 99% accurate. And the ones we're not getting right, we actually probably are right. But that's a different podcast, different story. You know, the test is incredibly accurate when compared against known samples. And I'm working with basically working for free. I'm not taking any salary or any money for a number of reasons to work with a company to put the test out there. And this is a great opportunity for us, because one of the things we'd like to do is have this test go worldwide. I'm telling you, it's more accurate than anything that's out there. It's cheaper, maybe not easier. It does take some brains to do it. So that's one reason we're in charge of it. We didn't hand it over to Stone and his clowns. It takes some brains to run the test. But they got plenty of that in China, and they actually got plenty of that all around the world. And but we're going to make sure they do it right. And I hope this isn't offensive, but I would say, on one hand, we might say that the intellectual property is kind of out there. I mean, you can read our papers and run the tests, although evidently maybe you can't, because the places that are trying to copy our tests aren't quite doing it right. Of course, we haven't published for a long time, so maybe they're not doing it right because I haven't published yet. Okay, maybe I'll cut them some slack. But We figured, you know what? If they're going to do it anyway, we might as well help them do it right. The Chinese patient market is not accessible. We can't get samples in and out of China, biological samples. So we're not losing any money from a business standpoint. Therapeutically, it's a huge market. But again, you know, the accessibility to that market is not up to me. That's going to be up to people making a different pay grade. So what can we do? Well, we can help them. We can help the neurologist and help the patient organization find the FSHD individuals in China, get organized. They actually have quite a infrastructure for clinical trials. Now, I understand the FDA does want us running clinical trials here and there, but I got to see some of the clinical trial sites where they do phase one clinical trials, a little cottage industry there. And again, these were paid individuals, so at least the site I saw. It was really just an outstanding site that was just put up at Huazhang Hospital in Shanghai. And, you know, they want to say, you know, how can we get in the game? And, you know, I just couldn't respond and say, you know, we're not going to let you because our countries disagree on politics, or that even me personally might disagree on some politics. You know what? If I didn't work with people I disagreed with on politics, I probably wouldn't work with anybody, because I know all of y'all think that I'm an extremist nut. Some of y'all all may. I actually just hold everybody accountable. I think the same standards apply across the board. Corrupt is corrupt. Everybody needs to follow the law. And I'm sorely disappointed by most of our political establishment here. So I'm just not going to let that get in the way. I'm just going to ignore it and say, you know what? I'm not propping anybody up. This is one of the questions, you know, are you propping up a regime? Really, let me tell you, FSHD, rare disease diagnostics, not propping up a regime, okay? Really just helping people just like we're helping you. They are as desperate as all of you have been to find out what is wrong with them. Do their kids have it? You know, it's, you know, family planning issues, which you may or may not agree with. And when it comes down to the FSHD community, they got the same issues we all have, with the exception that because they're in China, they really have limited access to help and information. And so we're doing everything we can. And you know what? You want to get mad at me? I even figured out now, I don't care. Because you know what? I think it's going to help them, and I think it's going to help us. Because one of the things we want, you know, my lab, quite honestly, we're sick of doing this FSHD testing. You know, it's a time sink. You know, I was writing reports in the LAX airport on the way to Taiwan, you know, trying to get you all your information and get you what's going on. Because I know you're desperate and you want to know the answers and you're freaking out. You know, I was writing reports on the plane. You know, it's a huge time sink for all of us. And now there are larger projects going, and you know, you know, some of the bad actors in the space are trying to take over, you know, the world of FSHD again. You know, it's like a 2-bit, Bond movie or something. And so part of that is going to need to be low cost diagnostics. And so we are going to get ourselves set up in a position where we're going to dictate the terms of how this is all going to be done. And trust me, you're going to be glad that we're the ones dictating the terms of this. And one of the trial runs is this set up at this lab in China. Can we teach someone else to do this and get it right? And what is the logistics? What's it going to cost? I mean, it's not CLIA, but a certified lab to have a properly certified test. And then just go through the logistics of having it done. So we get like a dry run on doing this. And it's, you know, we know how it is as research. You know, it's the same test. It's just going to be, can we teach someone else to do it? And because ultimately that's what we're going to do, is teach others around the world to do this, so that y'all don't have to keep sending samples into Reno, because we got other things to do. Trust me, we got other things to do, bigger and better things to do. Moving on from diagnostics to therapeutics and to gaining your strength back. So anyway, that's where I've been. It was, I didn't really have access, you know, I had pseudo access to email. I can tell you that the FBI wanted to have a chat with me before I went, and I got a debrief with them. I don't think they told me, don't put it on your podcast. I can just tell you the FBI, because I'm the first person from at least this area to go over there. And they just had a question. What's it like? No one's been over in 3 years. I got to tell you, I don't know, maybe you guys feel this way. You know, I talked with my friend Emma the other day, and she said, now you know how it feels, you know, people staring. You know, she has her wheelchair and she's out and about, and people, of course, stare sometimes because that's, people are just that way. Let me tell you, when you are the only white dude, I was going through the Chinese National Museum of Science and Technology or whatever, and these school kids were just staring at me with their jaws open, and they couldn't stop looking at it. What the? It was like they'd seen a ghost or something. Little old dudes like following me around, looking at me. And when I said something in English to one of my handlers, and so I just jumped out of their shoes. Holy crap, that's English. What the? Either I'm kidding. I'm actually not kidding at all. I mean, Shanghai is a big city. That's the second largest city in the world, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, you really never saw another white person, European, whatever, or non-white, someone that didn't look like they were, we'll say Asian, Chinese Asian. One of my tour guides, for one, you know, they really rolled everything out and did, you know, they wanted to show me how wonderful China is, you know, for a tourist. And it is, as are many, many places in the world. This is, you know, the first time speaking English in 3 years. I had a number of people that told me first time. And then when I presented at two symposiums. And at both, when they introduced me, it's the first time they've had an outsider invited in 3 years. You know, and you can say, yeah, well, you know, whose fault is that? Well, we won't get into that. But with the internet issues and information issues, you know, they're really isolated, and they really understand that they count on people like myself coming in and kind of educating them on what's going on in the world. Now, you might say, why are you doing that? Because, you know, we want to help people. I don't really care. We're gonna help everybody. All right. When you start pointing fingers, man, let me tell you, and it's getting tougher and tougher to be a U.S. person and point fingers the way this country's going. So I'm not pointing fingers. We're gonna say we're gonna help you. FSHD worldwide community. We're united with a cause and a problem, and hopefully soon with a cure. But yeah, you know, interesting. First time in my life really where I was. Well, I don't know if I should say that. I was the freak, but man, that's probably not true. But at least why I was acutely aware that I was there. Man, we went to this huge garden in Soju. And yeah, again, you know, there's like thousands and thousands of people around. It's only white dude. No, but man, it's street food, good food, all sorts of great food. They really rolled everything out for me because they want us to help them. You know what they don't tell them, but I would have helped them even. Actually, I didn't know any of this was going to happen. Actually, I thought I was just going and just giving a couple of talks, and I was just going to go around on my own and just tour around like I always do. You know, Takako decided she didn't want to go, and so I'm like, okay, I have a, but you know, I had a had somebody with me every minute, who was wonderful, supplied to me by one of the. Well, it's hard to say who they were supplied by. The hospital, the university, and the companies all kind of work together. They have a different view of conflict of interest over there. They're all kind of like in everything together. So wouldn't have worked here. So I wasn't exactly sure who was guiding me around. But again, it's, you know, we reported everything in my conflict of interest forms and reporting all disclosures. Like I said, I'm not accepting any funds, but, you know, I guess you could say accepted a few dinners. Draw on my reports, and yeah, it was just kind of interesting. They, you know, it's now that I know what to expect, so it's kind of funky because, you know, you see in the U.S. right, the current administration, right, they want to move to a cashless system, right? They want everything to be on, you know, they want to get rid of cash, you know, so they can tax you properly. And again, if that's the law, you know, you don't want, I mean, whatever, it's, you know, for your own safety and security. Well, let me tell you, it's pretty much a cashless system over there. Everything you do is on your phone. I had all this cash with me and I couldn't spend it. I mean, even somebody on the street, you know, you go to buy some plums from somebody on their bicycle on the street and they got a QR code that you scan and you pay them electronically. Like, geez, man, holy cow. I mean, every menu is on the QR code. You order, get the menu, you order, and then you pay. You pay your utility bills. You know, you order a car. I mean, every single thing. I mean, you try to pay in cash, they look at you like you're an idiot. Luckily, because it was pretty obvious why I was asking to pay in cash. And it's just really hard to do. You know, or if you do pay in cash, no one's got any change because nobody knows what to do with cash. Just like, so look what's coming. Now you say, what's the big deal? That sounds great, right? Well, the other part of that is, though, you know, you do everything on your phone, everything on these apps. But they can turn that app off on you. They can block you. If you put something out there that's not, it's all being monitored. And you put something out there that's not approved. And let me tell you, I mean, just think about, you know, the misinformation we have here that all turns out to be the truth, you know, or the people, you know, I had some good chats with some people there about censorship and the types of censorship that go on right now here in the U.S. And much of censorship there, you know, and how we're moving in that direction. And, you know, the downside there is when everything that you do is on an electronic device that a government has access to. And this is not conspiracy theory. This is the truth. And they decide that you've crossed a line that they don't want you to cross, and they block you. You can't do anything. You can't pay bills. You can't talk to anybody. You can't communicate. You can't go to a restaurant. You can't get a car. You can't do anything. So there's a lot of incentive not to say things that the people in charge don't want you to say, you know, which again, not necessarily saying things, at least in this country, when the people in charge don't want you to say things that frame the people in charge in a bad light, even though they're true, right? So it's not about misinformation. It's not about control. It's about controlling a message and controlling a population. Just be really, I don't know, man. In some ways, I felt like, boy, this, I got to step into the future of the U.S. And what we're coming to. Man, there are cameras everywhere. I mean, my God, every place you go, they take your picture. They scan in your passport. I mean, for everything, man. You go to a museum, they take your picture, scan your passport. Get on a train, scan your, you know, it's just, let me tell you, I'm willing to bet that they know every single place that I went. I mean, there are cameras everywhere. And every place I went, and again, for your safety, everything I bought, everything that someone bought for me, everything I ate, every place we went, if they wanted to. Now, the main thing for me is was pointed out for me is nobody cares. Right. I'm such a low value person. No one cares what I'm doing. So I never felt even uncomfortable with it all. It's like, yeah, whatever, man. You know, it just didn't bother me. Like, yeah, I did point out, I said, you know, someone asked me what I thought about China. I said, well, I did mention, I said, man, there's a lot of cameras. And they just were very quiet about that and sheepish. There are. I mean, every shop you go into, there's a camera. You get a picture going into the shop, you know, little cameras everywhere. You know, yeah, you think, let me tell you, it's coming. for your safety and protection, to make sure that, you know, well, whatever. Anyway, it's only time. Well, never mind. Anyway, so I'm back and we're setting things up. I gotta tell you though, I met a fantastic, absolutely brilliant, scientist over there that, has FSHD. She was just diagnosed with FSHD. And has just gotten her PhD, and we talked for a couple hours, and really just pleasant, great English, great ideas. Works in plant sciences, though, not, you know, works on rice, heat tolerability in rice. But really great molecular biologist, geneticist, biochemistry, mass spec, you know, you name it, genetics, the work, cell culture, you know, and is interested in FSHD, man, I think I may have found myself my new postdoc, you know, and I don't care what people are going to say. You know what? I'm looking for smart people, and it's a hard thing to find. And, man, I think I was just really, really impressed. We did a quick little Zoom with Takako and her to see, and then we're going to do some more follow-ups. But, you know, get something out. You know, when you put yourself out there, and, you know, because they want to send their best and the brightest. You can, again, you say, why don't you get our best and brightest? I'm just like, you know, I think I'm not sure what the education system here is interested in, but it sure as hell doesn't seem to be making our students the best and the brightest anymore. I had a great chat. You know, it's funny. I walked into this tea house with literally, you know, it's like someone's house. They sell tea out of this house, and it was in Soju, I guess. And I was obviously not Chinese. And, oh, you're American. Okay. And They wanted to sit down, and we actually told them we're not going to buy any tea because no one speaks any English. I had a translator that was with me the whole time. I said, no, we're not going to buy any tea because we bought tea in Guangzhou, but we just were checking this place out because it looked kind of cool. And they said, oh, that's okay. They want to talk with me because I'm American. And so we sat down with the family, and we had tea for a couple hours, learned how to make tea, great tea. They actually brought me some really special aged tea from the 90s. Evidently, if you do tea right, you can actually have tea can age like red wine. And so I brought some back a little bit that they gave me. But we just had a great chat about all sorts of things. They were just amazed. I just answered their questions. I'm like, I don't know. Maybe this guy's the secret place. I don't know. I don't think so. You know, no one knew we were going to stop in there. And he just had some questions. We just kind of talked about, you know, the American education system, the Chinese education system, what we do, the idea that we're helping people doing, you know, no cost diagnostics for a disease that of course they'd never heard of. And we're actually in China trying to help people. And I ended up as WeChat friends with these guys. So I got a couple of friends in China that are, they seem like good guys. I don't know. I mean, whatever. They were educating me in Chinese tea culture and stuff like that. It was just kind of fun. You know, it's just the same sort of, you know, it's just, you know, at a certain level, everybody's, you know, you're just people just hanging out, having tea in two different languages in China. it's just kind of cool, you know, and bringing people together. Actually, I had a great picture of me and the son shaking hands. You want a picture of the two of us shaking hands, China and U.S. shaking hands, saying, you know what, if you can get rid of the politicians very quietly, you know, people can get along. You know, people can get along. Give me all the grief you want. I honestly don't give a crap. The bigger things to worry about. I hung out in Taiwan for a little bit, and like I said, I toured a couple of cities in China. So anyway, that's where I've been. That's why my FSHD has been on. I tried to get squeeze out a podcast just before going, and I was just too busy organizing our diagnostics. But you know, we're helping everybody in the world. Everybody needs research testing, CLIA-approved diagnostics for FSHD. And access to therapeutics, and you know, if working with them is can help out, again with the individuals, the FSHD community, then you know I'm all for it. All right, so when we get back, I'm going to move on a little bit and talk more about those diagnostics and those numbers that I put together. Since I went through all the work to actually gather everything up for everybody, I needed it for some of my meetings. Just so you know, if you got, you know, those of you thinking, hey, you know, they got to steal everything. Let me tell you, I brought a burner computer with me, which means I brought a computer that was designed to go to China, and there, you just accept the fact there's the potential that everything that is on there could be copied. Your hard drive could be copied. So nothing is on there is something that I wouldn't freely allow someone to have. And then when I got back, computer's destroyed. So I had no concerns. Everyone's like, bring your computer with you everywhere. Don't ever leave it in your hotel. Ask her. I just left it in my hotel. Whatever. You know, if they want to, and what's the worst thing they can do? They're going to secretively diagnose people with FSHD. Whatever. Knock yourselves out. Again, I'm just not doing the type of stuff that the state is that interested in. I'm just glad that the neurologists are interested and helping the people with FSHD, because it's a lot. You know, actually, Dr. Joe, who invited me over there, she says she's got two or three patients a week, new patients a week coming into her clinic in Shanghai. That's a lot of FSHD patients, right? They got more than 1,000 in their registry. And anyway, so Bai Xingming's doing a fantastic job with FSHD China, but he also needs some help. And anyway, we're going to do what we can because we help everyone. we let other people just talk about helping everybody. We actually do it, and we're happy to do it. All right, man. You know what? R.E.M. I can't believe I haven't played any R.E.M., but this is from one of their all-time greatest albums ever. So check it out. Thank you. All right, Reckoning, REM's second album, Seven Chinese Brothers, one of the all-time great albums, you know, from the 80s. I absolutely love REM out of Athens. All right, so I'll talk diagnostic. Now, so one of the things I've told you all in the past is that I'm indestructible. Okay, so I have been kind of deciding whether or not to tell you my second story of being indestructible. And it gets to this idea that, you know, sometimes I get some criticism, and I'm always, you know, welcome criticism from patients about how we handle, you know, how do you tell somebody, gee, your testing came back consistent with FSHD, consistent with FSHD1, you know, and people get mad, oh, you just emailed it to me out of the blue, or you're fine. I mean, there's just no good time, right? You know you did the test, though. You know you submitted it, and when is a good time? First thing in the morning on Saturday, last thing at night on Friday, middle of the week, during the workday. I mean, I don't know when a good time. There's no good time to tell you. Sometimes, or the answer that you don't have FSHD, which you think would be good news, but if you know something's wrong with you, it's not good news, because then you're freaking out that, well, what's wrong with me? Right? And people are, you know, trying to tell me that I don't have any frame of reference, right? And so I'll tell you a little story, okay? So back in 2018, it was February, just out of the blue, I would just have some pain. And of course, I just ignore it and push through it because, you know, but I would get some pain, and I could be like laid up for half a day or something like that, just unable to move or anything. Anyway, I just like, okay, but it would go away. So I'm like, okay, it's not appendicitis or anything, so whatever. And so, you know, I remember I didn't want to go get checked out because I was on NIH study section. And so I had to go to Los Angeles and review, you know, a whole bunch of grants, NIH grants. And so, you know, I just drank water that whole trip pretty much. And it seemed to be fine. Okay. So I could control it with that. But then, must have been February 13th. Again, I just had the pain again, and this time it didn't go away. Like, it wouldn't go, and I was incapacitated, in bed, unable to move. And then the 14th came, Valentine's Day, and I didn't go into work. I actually was still laid up in bed, and I could not move from just absolute severe abdominal pain. And I still wouldn't go anywhere, because I'd say I would go away. I drank I thought I had an ulcer. I thought, okay, I got this astronomical ulcer from all the stress. And so I literally drank an entire bottle of Maalox, which evidently you're not supposed to do. There's an upper limit on how much Maalox you're supposed to eat, but I blew past that. And, you know, so it would kind of, but, you know, it was just kind of weird because it would move around, the pain would move around and it would go different places. And so I'm like, I just couldn't figure out what didn't make any sense. I didn't know if I had like a hernia or I'm pretty sure it wasn't, appendicitis because it would go to the other side and back. It was just all over the place. But man, it just didn't go away. And we're supposed to have, because I'm a romantic, Takiko and I were supposed to have Valentine's dinner with my parents. And I had to cancel because I physically could not go. I physically couldn't move to go to Valentine's dinner 2018. And so Takiko just had enough. She's like, screw this. And she drugged me off to the emergency room where they decided to keep me for quite a while and bring in some experts. They did some scans and everything, and then they don't tell you anything. They were like, they do the scan, and, you know, you're like, okay. Then they say, don't go anywhere. We're bringing in someone else to read the scan, like, now. You know, it's already, like, 9 at night. You're in the ER, CT scan, whatever. Eventually, they say, okay, well, we're gonna send you off to get your gut checked out, to go into digestive health, you know? So, again, I think, well, it could be just some astronomically bad ulcer. Okay, so you go in there and you get this lovely colonoscopy. Now, this time I'm only in my late 40s. Okay, so I'm not 50 yet. So I go get a colonoscopy. And let me tell you, when, you know, they're done. I mean, you're still just loopy. I mean, I was knocked out. They knock you out fully. And I was totally loopy, seeing double. And they just put this sheet of paper, you know, sheets of paper with all these pictures in front of you and say, you got a tumor. Okay, you got colon cancer. And here's these pictures. It looked like an alien. It looks like they said your tumor is so large that it's completely blocking your ascending colon. Okay, that's the part from the small intestine, right closest to the small intestine. They couldn't get the camera past it because it was almost completely blocked. And essentially, anytime I was eating anything that wasn't liquefied by the small intestine, it was getting blocked, and that's what the pain was caused by. So severe pain, couldn't eat anything except liquids. Okay, so you're just like, you know, if the mom calls, oh, so how'd it turn out? Oh, well, they just told me I had cancer. Well, you know what? It actually never even occurred to me. It may sound stupid in hindsight. I was just so sure that I was just having these stomach issues that would kind of come and go because I could kind of control it with food. I thought I was controlling it with acid food, but I was kind of controlling it with I guess the size of food, the size of chunks. And so that's how I found out. They told, you know, but it gets even better. So, you know, you're just still loopy, waiting. You got to wait there for like an hour until you get totally cleared up. And then doctor was able to take me home and I could walk out of there while they wheeled me out. But so that's how you find out. You went from you're fine, oh, something's wrong, to you have cancer. Make an appointment with the oncologist. You go into the oncologist. So I did. I went to the oncologist really quickly. And he just said, all right, well, we checked it out. It's fairly undifferentiated, which is bad. That means it's likely to metastasize. It has no known markers for any cancer that we've ever seen. So they screened for histological markers and came up negative for everything, which is why my testing screening came up negative, so I was fine. And they said, but considering the size and considering that when the history of when the reason you go to get checked out and they find a tumor, if the reason you go into the clinic is because of pain, that's really bad. That means it has really progressed, right? Normally, you know, you just get a mammogram and, oh, we found a little lump. You know, my mom had stage zero cancer, you know? Or, you know, you go and you find prostate cancer when you get an exam. Normally, when you're 50, you get a colon, you know, they say, oh, we got some polyps, you know, whatever. This thing was so big and so advanced that, you know, they just, what they just laid on me a little bit of information, okay? I had a 5% chance to live 5 years. That's what they told me in early March of 2018. You might notice the dates now. It has been 5 years, and I've beaten those odds because I'm indestructible. But that's how I found out. Let me tell you, when people think about getting, they just tell you straight up. There's no massaging that around. There's nothing. They said, look, this is what's going to happen. They said, we're going to go in and do surgery. Then you're going to go on chemo and radiation for, 6 to 9 months. And even with all of that, you have a 5% chance to live 5 years. Okay? This is actually, they just lay it on you. I tell people, hey, you know what? You came up consistent with FSHD. You may lose some function over the course of your lifetime, but it's quality of life and you're going to be fine. And we have therapeutics. They basically told me, we don't know how to treat this. And that's actually what the guy told me. I said, I'm a scientist. I was able to have a better conversation. Because I didn't have any known antigens, they said, we're just going to have to throw darts at it. They don't know. They said, if you get breast cancer, if you're ER positive or triple negative or whatever, that tells them how to treat it because they have this whole vast thing. They said they've never seen anything like this. They had no, And so they said, okay, so you want to have surgery? You got to have surgery. I'm like, well, actually, I decided, you know what? I'm going to put the surgery off. I mean, what the hell? You already just told me I'm basically dead. Screw that. Went down to Galveston with Takiko and checked out some birds. Watched the Final Four, how Michigan lose to Villanova in the national championship game. Did some kayaking in the sea, looking for some birds. Decided, you know what? Have one last outing before they hit me with all the chemo and the radiation. And living is worse than dying. They said basically because of the situation, they had figured it had probably already metastasized everywhere. Okay, that was the assumption made by these guys. And they're just telling you how it is. Okay. So that's a very different diagnosis from, hey, you came up positive, you have your shoulder hurts and you're positive for FSHD. And I'm not belittling you guys at all, but I get it. And what I got out of it is, I think about it, well, how would I like to have been told? There's no good way to tell me. What, sing a song, put it into a limerick, haiku. I mean, you just got to tell them. That's what you do. They just tell you, look, serious business. This is what it is. Here's the outcome. Here's what's going on. Sucks for you. Got to see the next patient. And it's not. That's just how it is. You got to deal with it. Okay. So I've been there. I've been there in a different situation that substantially worse. Now, for those of you who are worried about me, because I did wait 5 years before telling anyone this. I don't want to jinx it. I did actually, I then had to time my surgery because I was going to give a talk in Hong Kong in May, and I didn't want to miss that. I was going to a Gordon conference in Hong Kong on the epigenetics of diabetes, and I was going to go teach them about how to do diabetes research, and I didn't want to miss that. So I had to time, you can't fly within a month of having a major surgery. So I had to time my surgery again with my work schedule, so that I could go to that meeting. So I went in on a Tuesday. I came home on a Friday. I have eight incisions on my tummy. That's why you never see me shirtless. That's not why. I got plenty of reasons why. But some cute scars. Hopefully chicks dig scars, right? Takiko does, so that's counts. And I went in on Tuesday. I would have come home Thursday. But I had this bright idea Wednesday night that I didn't need to call the nurses to go to the bathroom, and I cracked my head open, and they had to do emergency head surgery on me. They're like 4 a.m. on Thursday. Man, my doc was pissed at me. Pull the button, man. But anyway, they didn't have me listed as a fall risk. Anyway, so I cracked my head open, blood everywhere in the bathroom. So that cost me an extra day in the hospital. Came home Friday. Believe it or not, my mom actually was out of town, so I didn't really tell mom how bad it was. So I went and picked mom up at the airport after talking, let you out, and then I get behind the car and drive. And I was at work on Monday, and nobody in my lab except for Carice knew about this. Yeah, I just gone. Going for surgery Tuesday, back at work on Monday. Okay, majors took out 18 inches of my large intestine, took out 33 lymph nodes, and I appreciate Dr. Thomas because I've never seen a happier person in my life. Sorry. Yeah. Oh, I was pretty happy. 0 out of 33 or 32, whatever, were positive for, so it had not metastasized. And he said he'd never in 24 whatever years had that. So cured by surgery. So now you're going to say, well, that's not the same deal as me. You know, it wouldn't be great if I told you an FSHD and a week later you find out you were cured. Well, you are going to be cured. You're going to be treated. But it was America. Actually, he's just absolutely dumbfounded. In surgery, they'd never seen anything like this. It was just this giant alien growing in my large intestine that they had it all out. It hadn't metastasized, even though it had de-differentiated a bit. I'm still considered in remission. I get checked up. I never had to go get chemo, never had to do anything. We had already started kind of remodeling the house, and so I could function it. I had already contacted two researchers in the field that I trust to let them know what was going on. We're going to look at some experimental CAR T therapies, but also I wanted to make sure my FSHD research continued. I wanted to make sure everybody in my lab was going to have a home when I'm gone. Kind of stressful, but it was all fine. I didn't even miss a week of work. And, you know, the only thing that pissed me off, frankly, is that no one in my lab actually commented that I suddenly had stretchy pants. I like to think, and I'm not the snappiest dresser, but all of a sudden I go from my normal outfits and I come in wearing these really loose fitting, like jogging pants. I look like a, you know, an 80s mobster, you know, in a tracksuit because, you know, everything's pressing against your incisions and, you know, they got all this glue holding you together now and all this stuff. And you got to be really careful what you eat. Can't lift anything, but you know what? Didn't even miss a day or didn't even miss a week of work. Kept going. Didn't need to tell anybody except Carice. And kind of lied to mom about how bad the prognosis was. But once we found out about it, it was okay. So anyway, I understand getting a shocking diagnosis or, in this case, a research test. And I also understand there's no good time. And what I really understand is it's the only way you can move forward. And so I do the best I can. Present you with your research test results, try to talk it over with you, let you know what's coming and our best understanding of what's coming and how to deal with it, and I'm spending every waking minute since then trying to make sure that after you find out that you have epigenetics consistent with FSHD, that we're going to have a therapy for you. And that actually is what changed our mind as a lab. I thought about it and I said, okay, yeah, you know, everyone always says, hey, you can be dead at any time, right? Anybody can, you can get hit by a bus, you know, you can have a heart attack. You never know what's coming, but sometimes you really just kind of face death or whatever you face. And that's what I felt like. I just felt like, you know, I kind of probably some of the same emotions you have had. I remember sitting there just thinking, why is this happening to me? What did I do to deserve this? This must be wrong. It can't be right. I mean, you go through all of these sort of emotions that maybe y'all have gone through. I mean, told you have, except again, I was told I had less than 5 years to live. and it was going to be a miserable life for those 5 years. You think, okay, I got a break. I get another chance. You know, the next time I'm facing death, and look back and say, I've done something with my life. This was pre my FSH. You know what we did? We started, I said, screw these idiots at the society, you know, Stone and bozos that are getting in our way and died. I started my FSHD soon after that. Decided to do diagnostics for the world. We actually decided that's when we started putting our company together. We are going to try to commercialize our testing, try to bring this to people, bring this to patients. We just really decided we're not going to screw, and I don't want to say we screwed around before, but we're going to leave something on this world. And what that's going to be is Carmelo Highwater making the FSHD community better and put them in a better place, whether that's making animal models. You know, it gets back to, you know, we started thinking every single thing that we're going to do as a lab is going to be to significantly advance the needle, to significantly advance the field, not incremental. We started putting in the plans for the pig model, putting in plans for, you know, what do we need to do to really do something so that, anyway, that's how I reacted to, and again, I got a break, right? I got, some miracle cure, but, it did actually change my outlook on life. And you know what, that's why I'm a little bit angry, you know, and that's why, we take this so seriously. Is that this truly is our life's work, you know, and I don't know how, you know, again, I may get whacked on the way home, you know, maybe run into a bear on 580 South. I don't know. And I'm killed, but, we're going to leave a legacy of making the world better for the FSHD community. And we're going to steamroll anybody that gets in our way on doing that. We'll help people. We'll work with people, but man, you want to get in our way, Mark, Eva, some of you clowns out there, man, look out. Because let me tell you, I've looked into the abyss and come out. There's nothing you can throw at me that's going to rattle me, man. And I got more stories too. Anyway, so that's my diagnostic story. I do get it. I do understand. You know, your kids, I don't have kids, but I do. I get it. Okay. There's no easy way to tell you. All I can tell you is there's a whole worldwide community that supports you and working their butts off to make this to get a therapy so that you're going to be as fortunate as I am. That someday you'll be told, hey, you, it looks like you got FSHD. Guess what? Here, we got something we can do about it. That's what we're trying to do. All right. So I told you I got this diagnostic test. I want to get into some of it. So let me bring up the statistics. All right. So one of the important things about my diagnosis was it was accurate. Okay. Now, granted, they gave their best information on prognosis based on the available data. And, you know, so I was an outlier. Thank God. And, you know, but it's no different with FSHD, right? You need accurate testing, right? Accurate diagnostics. And so the question has been around our epigenetic testing that we promote through my FSHD and through my research lab, how accurate is your test? And I always tell people it's really, really accurate, you know, with how many significant numbers, how many digits. All right. Well, in working with this company in China to get them up and running, they actually wanted to know. Okay, they said, how they actually want to know. And so, okay, so it took me like 2 weeks to assemble all of our data and sort out what is a genetically confirmed case. So if we're just going to go and say genetically confirmed cases, you know, of FSHD, what exactly is the accuracy? Now, we have two types of testing. We have our low throughput, low Sanger sequencing method, and we have our high throughput next gen sequencing method. So I separated those out, okay, and said, looking at now this is through, this is genetically confirmed cases. Now it turns out we didn't have nearly as many genetically confirmed cases as I thought we did. I mean, because it's an interesting thing. So I have all of these cases that say healthy, but they actually have never been tested for FSHD. And I have all of these cases that say I have like 25 other neuromuscular diseases. So you can be genetically confirmed myotonic, limb-girdle, Emery-Dreifuss. But again, they've never been checked for FSHD. So I didn't count those. We've done those assays. Those will be a different paper. But I basically said I can only count samples where we have genetic confirmation of FSHD1 or FSHD2 or not FSHD. It turns out that's the hardest one to kind of find. Okay, so if we say, it turns out for the Sanger method, this is those of you, the early method, if you got into here in 2019 or before, and you had testing done by us, we had 294 samples that had a genetic confirmation of either FSHD1, FSHD2, or cell culture, or I'm sorry, or not FSHD. 292 times we got it correct, 2 times incorrect. Then if we look at FSHD1 versus FSHD2 versus not FSHD, right, we got 286 correct. Sometimes we can't tell the difference between FSHD2 and, or we don't actually know, it turns out, but in those cases where we thought it was FSHD2, it's probably FSHD1+2, and they did not have the testing, so it's not really clear that that's a mistake. But anyway, how does it work out? The accuracy of testing of FSHD versus not FSHD, 99.32% for our old school low throughput Sanger method. Okay, that's how accurate that is. Then what about the next method? Well, this is our next gen sequencing method. This is if you've come in probably since mid-2000s. This is high throughput. We actually look at, you know, 10,000 of reads. We got great depth. And this is actually, it turns out, a bit more accurate. We've done a number of samples where we did Sanger sequencing versus next-gen sequencing. And to show that they give you the same result, when they do most of the time, but it's much more confidence in the next-gen sequencing result. Okay, so what is that? Well, we did 391 samples, and 388 of the times we got it correct. So 3 we got wrong. And again, the ones that we got wrong, not 100% sure we got them wrong. But it doesn't matter. The paperwork says we got them wrong. Correct diagnosis of FSHD1 versus FSHD2 versus not FSHD, 377. So accuracy of testing of FSHD versus not FSHD, 99.23%. Accuracy of FSHD1 versus 2 versus not FSHD, 96.4%. And again, you know, these ones that we get wrong are ones we think are FSHD2, but they're diagnosed with FSHD1. They may very well be FSHD2. They're just FSHD1+2. So we're actually going through and checking those out because people only get checked for one or the other. You know, once they find FSHD1, they don't look for FSHD2. So anyway, those are the numbers on our genetically confirmed samples. So pretty dang accurate. All right, so that's our stats. And, you know, we're going to be publishing this all soon. There's a whole lot more that goes with it. You know, we've done repetition, so it's highly repetitive assay. We've done multiple samples from the same person collected over time. You know, the works. I mean, it's just an incredibly accurate assay for FSHD status. And quite honestly, I think some of the ones that we pick that we get wrong are wrong because they don't fit the current definition of FSHD. And well, you know what? We're going to fix that too, because, you know, all diagnostics start clinically. And some of these fantastic neurologists out there that really understand FSHD and understand clinical FSHD and have some people that are not FSHD1 and FSHD2, guess what? We find them to be dead. We know they're FSHD by our test, and so we're going to set it up. We're going to get this going, and we're going to change the world of FSHD diagnostics in the near future. And once again, people are either going to get on board or get run over. But let me tell you something. We're going to be in charge, okay? You know why? Because you've shown you can't be trusted, pal. You know who you are. That's more than one pal. Anyway, so you know, I'm going to cut this one kind of short. You might not say an hour short, but I'm going to cut it short. I have a good friend of mine is coming this week. Emma Weatherly with her husband Rob are coming from Brisbane in Australia. Emma is, her title is Executive Director of the FSHD Global Research Foundation. You know what? They do it right. They do so much right, and they do so much on a smaller budget. Man, they have about $1 million operating budget, and man, they'd make that million last, okay? Let me tell you, you don't need $5 million, you don't need $100 million. You know, if you spent the large money correctly, that'd be great. But you know what? It's not how much money you have, it's how you use it. It's the integrity and capabilities of the people in charge of making the decisions on how to spend this money. That is what dictates impact and success. Okay. Getting the right, getting the right people is paramount. Getting the wrong people, put in $1 billion. You got some bozo running it. It doesn't matter. Okay. You can make a huge impact with them when, you know, we have a saying in the lab, like finds like. Okay, that's what we say in lab. You know, we chuckle all the time when we say who works together, who's funded. You know, I check and see who's funding what and whatever, and you always see the same. Like finds like, you know. And let me tell you, I like to say, I think that we are, you know, we have found FSHC Global Research Foundation, the Chris Carino Foundation, you know, Friends of FSHD Research Foundation, and FSHD Canada up there in Neil Camarda. You know, those are who we work with, like finds like, similarly aligned, similar mission. And man, we're going to nail this because, you know what, I got kind of got the traveling Jones going. I kind of like, well, that was kind of fun to travel as a big wig, so to speak. I know, don't give me crap. Oh, give me all the crap you want. I don't care. Tell me how I'm supporting a repressive regime. And anyway, and then go look in the mirror, depending on how you voted. Anyway, so we'll be back this weekend with Emma Weatherly joining us on the podcast in person. She'll be in town for the bioscaffolds meeting that's going on, because everybody in the world wants to know how to build back your muscle, how to get your strength back after we've cured FSHD, after we've shut down the destruction. We want you to get your muscle strength back. We're already working on it. It might seem new. You know, I saw some email or something posted that said, oh, there's going to be some sort of Zoom meeting on this sort of thing going on. Yeah, you know what? Guess what, pal? People have been working on it. People in the know, people that plan, have been working on this for a number of years. This is why we need the pig model, okay? Large animal model for preclinical testing therapeutics. Large animal model for building your muscle back, okay? Get a clue, get a plan. We've had a plan all along, pal. And that's why we're doing it. And all of a sudden, everybody's interested. You know, little red hen all over again. Everybody wants the bread. Nobody wants to make help you make it. But you know what? That's okay. That's okay. Not everybody can have a clue. That makes the rest of us look better. All right. But Emma's got a clue. She's fantastic. Natalie Cooney, Bill Moss, the gang in FSHC Global. Really looking forward to hanging out with them this weekend. And, you know, we'll see how it goes. But anyway, Emma will be coming with us soon. And meanwhile, you know, stay cool. We got Jagger. Jagger's going to have a new track next time. He's dropped a new track, and we'll bring it to you with Emma next time. All right, man, I'm out of here.
Thank you for listening to the MyFSHD podcast, where we share with you the latest news and information on FSHD as we strive for a cure. Do you have a question for Peter? He'd love to hear from you. You can reach him at peterjones@med.unr.edu. Thank you for listening, and join us again next time for more news and information.